Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare
Hare
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Probably my anarthas interference. There is a whole ocean of rasa. There is a whole unlimited ocean of happiness. We all suspect about it. We have always suspected about it. Everybody is searching for that rasa, for that happiness. Devotees are more lucky because they know about the better quality rasa. And Rupa Goswami has written a whole book which is called Bhakti Rasamrita Singha. So Bhakti is devotional service. Rasa means mellow taste, very sweet taste. Devotees usually like juices. Somehow you can find that devotees are more into fruits and healthy diet and juices and everything similar. So rasa is like juice. Actually, in Hindi, juice is ras. Yeah? In Bengali, also rash. I say. So bhakti, rasa, amrita. Amrita means nectar, and is the name derived from the heavenly drink, which gives immortality. Mrita means death. In most Indo-European languages, you have something connected with mrita. In Slavic languages, it's smerť, smrt, mrt, the same root. In Roman languages, you have more and mortal. Yeah, in English we have mortal. It's the same three letters. Mrt. And amrita means something that's opposite. That's the opposite from death. Amrita. And coincidentally, it's not only very healthy drink. It gives you immortality. It's very good for health. But it's also very tasty. Therefore, it's the nectar has come to know. It's come to mean something very tasty, nectarian. And this is Bhakti Rasamrita, but it's not just Bhakti Rasamrita. It's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's the whole ocean. It's not only good. In this world, we sometimes find something good, but it's a little bit. You know, sometimes the tastiest dish is just a little bit in the feast. But here you have a good thing and a real lot of it. You know, a whole Sindhu. Whole ocean. You can drink as much as you want. You can even swim there. You can live in that ocean. So the purpose of our course here is to get some better understanding of the science of bhakti in order to get some access to that inexhaustible ocean, to that great ocean of amrita. You have already studied nectar of instruction, yes? Nectar instruction is also nectar. It's very short, just 11 verses. by the same author, Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami is our greatest acharya. We are all called Rupanugas. It's one of the names for our sampradaya. It's Rupanuga sampradaya. We are all followers of Srila Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Prayag by the bank of Ganga. He used to be a minister in Nawab Hussain Shah's government. Was, by material standards, was considered to be quite successful. One was prime minister, the other was minister of finance. Who was the minister of finances? Sanatan. Okay. So Rupa Goswami was the prime minister. It's nowadays, to get elected as a president or to become a prime minister, one, you know, sometimes a person is ready to give everything and even more. So many scandals in politics. So he was prime minister of a very big country, a very successful country. 500 years ago, the richest place in the world was not US, was not Japan, it was not Europe. The richest place in the world was India. If you remember Columbus, 500 years ago, I think it was, 500 years ago and something, 1492, right? So he went on his ships in order to discover a better route to India. Right? They went to find a better way to get to India. Why? Because India was the fabulous land of plenty. You had everything in India. People were supposed to be overflowing in gold and jewels in India, and there was spices, there were so many amazing things in India, and so everybody wanted to get a good way to go to India. I read once in the Food for Life office some research, economic research, about ancient, not even so ancient, India, just 500 years ago. So just about 500 years ago in India, a middle official, not a very high official, but just like, you know, middle level official, in a month was getting more than the Kingdom of England was getting in a year in terms of money. So just a normal official, not too high, was getting more gold in a month than the King of England was getting in a whole year. So it was a pretty developed country. Only by the mercy of British, they managed somehow to change the economy of the country. Even when Muslims were here, they were exacting tax in a percentage of the harvest. So it means that if there is a famine, if there is a drought, then it means there is less to give. But the British invented a fixed tax, a fixed amount of money. So therefore, when there was good harvest, people could give enough tax. But when there was no harvest, then they had sometimes to sell their land and to lose their land in order to pay the tax to the government, to the rulers. And so basically, it... Such an economical policy pauperized, impoverished India. And of course there was direct drain. You know, British were taking out ships and ships of stolen goods from here. But at the times of Rupa Goswami, he was prime minister of the most prosperous part of India, Bengal. Bengal was very prosperous. He was the prime minister. And he said, it's no good. It's not good enough. Right? On the contrary, he said it's something very unpleasant. For a long time, he and his brother Sanatan Goswami, Dabar Khas, and second one, Sakar Malik. Yeah. So they were called, they were given these names by Nawapa Seng Shah. So for a long time they were planning how to escape that high post. You know, nowadays you cannot push out a person from the high seat with a, I don't know, with a crane, with a bulldozer. You cannot push him out of that seat. But they were just trying to find a way to leave those high posts and become simple followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then finally they managed to escape. Rupa Goswami just left. Sanatana Goswami, he pretended he is sick. So Rupa Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They had met him previously when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the way to Vrindavan. And the second time Rupa Goswami already escaped his government post, and he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Prayag. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing Rupa Goswami in Prayag very thoroughly in all the details of bhakti. So basically all this detailed instruction is expanded here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the order to Rupa Goswami to present this science as a book. He gave him the blessings to present it as a book. And Rupa Goswami has presented it as a book, and he supplied many quotes from the scriptures to substantiate all the statements in this book. It's, on one hand, it's a revolutionary book. On the other hand, Rupa Goswami presents it as a solid piece of traditional wisdom passed down in the parampara and also given in the Puranas. So this is a great fortune for us to have access to this book. Srila Prabhupada has translated this book as an overview, as a study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He published this in 1970. Srila Prabhupada says that at the end he says, "The nectar of devotion." Lila Madhuri Maharaj, can I ask you to read the last paragraph of the preface? Do you have the book? Yeah, where you are. The last paragraph.
The nectar of devotion is especially presented for persons who are now engaged in Krishna consciousness movement. I beg to offer my sincere thanks to all my friends and disciples who are helping me to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western countries. And I beg to acknowledge with thanks the contribution made by my beloved disciple Srimati Jayananda Maharaj. My thanks are due as well to the directors of ISKCON Press who have taken so much care in publishing this great literature. Hare Krishna. Signed, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta.
April 13, 1970. Thank you. So you can see the DBT is even called here ISKCON Press. It's not even DBT yet. It's still ISKCON Press. It's 1970. So Srila Prabhupada is presenting very nicely Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And it is very important for us to, it's one of the most important books to learn, to study. There are some things here which we may not even realize after decades of practicing Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we are practicing without knowing some very important points in this science of bhakti. Alright, okay. You cannot hear me very well, yeah? If I have to either shout or kiss the microphone. Any questions so far? Yes?
Now it is called Nectar of Devotion, but in Hindi it is called
Yes. Yeah, Hindi is lucky because so many words are there from Sanskrit. So oftentimes you don't even have to translate. You can just take directly from Sanskrit and leave it as it is, and then it's there. But in English, we need to translate. So if we give a full name, it will be the ocean of the nectarian tastes of the immortal science of devotion. And it will becomes very long. So Prabhupada is given a very short name, Nectar of Devotion. Just to have it short. Anything else anybody wants to? Any other questions or comments? You have something? No? You have a half a finger raised, so I'm wondering. Rupa Goswami is the author of Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. We can all go to Radha Damodar, especially soon Kartik Mass starts, Damodar month. There is Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir there. There is Rupa Goswami's Pratibha Murti, worshipable deities. And we also have even Samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami. So you can go and pray to Srila Rupa Goswami to get blessings to understand this book. Very good. Very good. Wonderful. Oftentimes, to understand these books, we need to get a special mercy. I remember once, when I was still a child, practically, my grandfather, who was a Christian priest, he gave me a Bible, and I said, "Oh, it's a nice book. I will read it." So he said, "You have to read it, but you also have to pray so that you can understand." So I remember till now how I was surprised, because I had read many books, and usually you just read, right? Sometimes you read and think. Yeah, but here you have to read, you have to think, but you also have to pray. Yeah, it was very interesting that you have to read and think, but also you have to pray so that the knowledge is opened to you, revealed to you. And we also know you need to do some service. All right. Srila Prabhupada writes, "Lord Chaitanya's principle is universal. Anyone who knows the science of Krishna and is engaged in the service of the Lord is accepted as being in a higher position than a person born in the family of a Brahmana. That is the original principle accepted by all Vedic literatures, especially by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The principle of Lord Chaitanya's movement in educating and elevating everyone to the exalted post of a Goswami is taught in the Nectar of Devotion." From Nectar of Instruction, you may remember, Srila Prabhupada also points out, also in the preface, that we all are supposed to become Goswamis. That's the purpose of our practice. We all want to become Goswamis. Here Prabhupada emphasizes the same thing. We have to become Goswamis. Goswami means we have to learn how to control our senses, but even more important than controlling our senses, and a key to controlling our senses, is controlling... Okay, not the neighbors, not the spouse, not anybody else, but the mind that's inside. And how to control the mind? That's the question, to which we get the answer here. Before we continue with the preface, I wanted to ask you to please think Can you hear me if I speak like this?
Yes.
Suggest that there are certain ways to study, and one of the things you are advised to do is before you even read the book, you may just like kind of look through it, skim it, just look over the table of contents and what's there, and then try to imagine what would you read about. For all of you, it doesn't have to be imagination. You all know what's Bhakti. But still, first I would like all of you to try and guess what are some of the main things that you will learn from this first part of the Nectar of Devotion. So, guesstimate is more than word. Yep.
How to love Krishna.
How to love Krishna. Okay. Very good.
Sadhana Bhakti.
Sadhana Bhakti. Don't you know
Sadhana Bhakti?
Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Don't you know already how to do Sadhana Bhakti?
Maybe I don't know what comes after Sadhana Bhakti.
What comes after Sadhana Bhakti, okay. And the graduation of Sadhana Bhakti. Okay, very good. Yes?
What is the meaning of Bhakti? And why only Bhakti to Krishna and not to anybody else?
Very good, okay. Why Bhakti only to Krishna, nobody else? What is the meaning of Bhakti? But this is a question. What would be your answer to that?
Bhakti, if you see in the dictionary also, is Bhakti will be only to Krishna. Bhakti can never be to any demigods.
Why?
Because the very word Bhakti, which is actually always directed to only Krishna. Puja will be for the demigods.
Right. So why?
Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we are related to Him. We are His eternal, part and parcel.
How about Narayan?
Narayan is actually an expansion of Krishna. And with the expansion of Krishna, we can have awe and reverence. We cannot have, love.
Okay, so rasa. You want rasa?
Yeah,
rasa. Okay. Taste rasa. Good. Okay, so somebody else would like maybe to give a very short definition of the word bhakti. What is it that we are learning here about bhakti? That's short, okay?
Love of Godhead.
Yes?
Relationship.
I think you didn't have the first word. Our deep insight, so motive is a very important thing here. Okay? You can please also think more about this at home and write more about your personal goals in studying Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first part. Anybody would like to share? Anybody can share with them? Yes? Good. This is these are questions. That's a second part which I haven't yet asked you to do. That I will ask you also to do. But here I was asking you to write as if you have already achieved, as if Krishna has already answered your question. So in other words, you will have to write that I am established in complete understanding of being an eternal servant of Krishna. And also, what does it mean exactly for you personally? Like for me, being understanding that I am eternal servant of Krishna, understanding this completely will mean that throughout the day I will think not about myself first, but about Krishna. I will be searching for service. I will try to do my service. I'll be doing my service happily, and I will try to do it as good as possible, as well as possible. Right? So you can write, I am doing this like this, I am like that and like that, in present tense. You can speak about this a little later. The goal setting. Goal setting is very important everywhere, especially in the Vedic culture. You can see that whatever mantra you chant or whatever yaga you perform, before that, you always say, I am such and such, on this and this tithi, I'm doing this and this mantra or this and this yaga. And Vini Yoga, or the purpose or the goal of doing this, is such and such. Like Vishnu Kirtan, for example, yes? Glorifying Vishnu, or whatever. So it's very important, you know, as Lewis Carroll, maybe somebody remembers such an author in the West, great mathematician, Lewis Carroll. He wrote the Alice in Wonderland, Girl Going Behind the Mirror. Did anybody read this,
yes.
Inshallah? Yes. So he said, I think it's there in the Alice Wonderland. In the Wonderland, she asks, I think the Cheshire Cat, yeah, there's a Cheshire Cat, or rather the smile of the Cheshire Cat, yeah, hovering in the air. So she's asking him, where should I go now? Yes? And the Cheshire Cat answers that you can go, he says, it depends on where you want to get. Yes? It depends on where you want to come. So do you have somewhere you want to come to? She said, no, it doesn't matter. I don't have any specific place I want to get to. So then the Cheshire Cat wisely answers, then you can go anywhere. It doesn't matter. If you don't have a specific goal, then any road will take you there. If you don't have a specific goal, any road, any kind of activity will take you there to that something. So, and you can see this, the Brahminical mantras, the mantras you are chanting, if you have gotten the second initiation, they are actually built on that principle of reviewing your goals. Nowadays, no matter what you study, no matter what you even train for, even if you're just training for some, basketball playing or whatever, everybody emphasizes, all the coaches and trainers and teachers emphasize that you have to very specifically set a goal. Set a very specific goal that can be best if it's measurable. Best if you can, put specific number on it. Yes? Objectives, have objectives. Like, for example, I will chant mantra in such a way that I get 7 tears flowing from my eyes. It's a joke, yeah? Not necessarily 7 tears, but something specific. And it's best if it's in the present tense, as you can see in the Gayatri Mantras. They're all in the present tense. Vidmahe, dhimahi, prachodayat. Prachodayat is an optative, let him, may he. But it also can be taken as present tense. In other words, it's the ideal goal setting. It's all in present tense. So, for any activity, it's better to have a specific goal and have a specific picture of yourself, what you are after you have achieved this goal. And then you can put it down in the present tense. Anyway, I probably have scared all the rest of you, and nobody would want to read their own goals, but maybe, yes, Krishna Guru Maharaj?
Firstly, how will I serve Krishna more and more better each day? Secondly, is I want to concentrate my mind in the form of Krishna, that is always thinking about Krishna and how to actually spread the Krishna conscious movement. And being a servant of the servant, always associating, how will I associate with the devotees? And yeah, I think after this, I think develop love of God.
Okay, very good. So, how we can word it in an even more effective way? So again, these are questions. So one was how, what was the first one?
I want to serve Krishna more and more better each day.
Yes, serve Krishna more and more and better each day. So how to put it as a very effective goal? To put it as a very effective goal, we say that every day, do you have some specific service that you do normally?
At home? Yeah, preaching services.
Preaching services. You preach where? In the university?
Day.
University, on the street, in Namahata?
In congregation program.
Congregational program.
So.
Okay, what would that mean specifically for you to preach better? How would that manifest that you are a better preaching than you are now? If it's possible to be a better preacher, I don't know.
I understand that these all are part and parcel of Krishna, and they are very, very, you know, very, very innocent.
Okay. So that means if you see somebody as a part and parcel of Krishna, that means what do you feel towards that person?
Compassion.
Compassion, okay. What else?
And then
respect.
Respect. Yes.
Okay. So then the goal would be that every day, as I preach, I see everybody with compassion, Krishna's part and parcel, feeling respect, and every day I feel more respect and more compassion. Alright? So that's the goal. So you can write that every day, every time I preach, I feel deeper compassion and respect to everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. To make it more specific. And that would also, means you are inspired, if you're feeling compassion and respect, you're inspired to give something to the person. Okay? So, anybody would like to read their goal again? Yes, Mamaji.
Absorb the knowledge that is valuable for my own improvement on the path of devotion.
Absorb the knowledge. And how will it manifest?
I will improve myself.
How? Maybe you're already. How will it look like? Aren't you already good in devotion? What's missing? Like, for example, what would you like to improve, as you're saying, that you don't have it already? What would you like to change? You're smiling, you're hearing Krishna Katha. It's already good. I think you're a respectful person. You probably can deal with other people. So what is it that you can improve? Maybe there is nothing that you have left to improve. So what is it that you would like to get? What is your service or normal activity in at home? In the temple, serving the deities or everything. Okay. Do you sometimes feel somewhat frustrated in your service? Never. Okay. So maybe you're already perfect. I don't know. What is?
That's not true. Because I was frustrated in the outside world, so everything here seemed very nice. But as far as my own improvement goes, I think I'm not even open to the first step. I have anger, which I can't control.
Okay.
Very
now we.
Discipline, I cannot.
Okay. Very good. Excellent. So now you can write that. Even if there are provoking circumstances, and if this and this Das comes and tells me this nasty thing he can tell me, I will feel peaceful and thankful to Krishna, right? And disciplined means I will finish things on time and will start things on time. Again, if you put some specific things that you will finish and start. So that will be specific. Okay? And then you can think how Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu can help you in that. So make it more specific, because if the goal is not specific, then you cannot say whether you have achieved it or not. But if you have, or whether you are moving towards this goal. Okay? So make it more specific like this. In which areas exactly do you want to improve, and how exactly do you want to improve? So then you say that I get up every day, 44 and a half, or whatever, 44 minutes and 30 seconds, and I go to bed every day at 8:14, yeah, and for example, yes, I finish all my rounds, there's no such thing as all my rounds, there's, let's say, 16 rounds before 10, or something like that, specifically. And when there are provoking circumstances, I'm tolerant, peaceful, and thankful. I feel peaceful and thankful to Krishna. Okay, so this will be your home task to work more on these personal goals. It's one of the most important things, right? To set a goal and fill it with some personal meaning. It has to be inspiring. You have to. You know, it's like a picture that you look, it's like a personal advertisement for yourself. Advertisement, the effective advertisement is when you see, you think, gee, I need this thing. I must buy that thing. That's the perfect advertisement. So you have to, even if I have to spend, half my salary or something, or whatever my savings are, so make a personal advertisement for yourself. Make a very attractive picture of what you are after you have gained, after you have attained this goal. Right? It shouldn't be dry. It shouldn't be, I can picture myself like, very austere, eating 15 grains of rice every day, and then I look at this and I think, whoa, I don't want to be like that. It's probably very demanding. So make it an attractive picture of yourself and just see yourself. For example, I am. Satisfied with whatever comes. I'm so satisfied that I am peaceful, even if somebody provokes me to become angry, right? And I am so self-disciplined or so self-controlled that I go to bed at that time. I get up at this time and put something, your gains there, because going to bed and getting up, it's what you more or less what you give. Doesn't show what you gain. So then you see, you include in that picture that you are, as you are getting up in the morning, you are rested, you are well rested. Yeah. So every day I'm well rested and full of energy for all my service because I go to bed at this time, get up at this time, and okay. So make it specific and put something personal, what's attractive for you personally there. Clear in this regard. So let's add a few.
Let's write out for you. Don't forget. So it has to be personally attractive. Attractive. positive feature, what we actually would like to be. And specific. Everybody knows what means specific? So very specific things. Don't try to improve or better. Just specifically say, what exactly, how does it exactly show that you are improving? How can you decide, are you improving or not? How do you judge? So for example, it has to be written in such a way that you can call a 10-year-old, no, 10-year-old, an 8-year-old boy from there, from the group of them, volleyball, whatever playing, give them a, you know, marking this, marking sheet, and they can just, you know, watch you mark it. Yes, 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 he's improving. Because if you just tell them, I'll improve, I'll be better, deeper, brighter, lighter, heavier, whatever, it's not measurable. You have to put specific numbers so you can judge you are moving somewhere. And that is much easier to achieve. Because if I say I'll be better, how am I going to be better? If I say specifically, don't be better at 8 or 9, then it's clear what I have to do. Yeah, it means 1 hour before I have to wind everything up, go brush my teeth, and it becomes clear all of a sudden. If I say I have to be disciplined, it's unclear what I have to do. And if you put specific manifestation of that, then it becomes very clear what needs to be done. Electric light, but what he's giving us internet. What do we do? Do we go look on it? Can go look some pornographic site, or you look some, or you know, some trust? So it's giving us so much mercy. But if you are specific about where do we want to direct this energy, and if you are specific about what we want, you know what's the price of this spontaneous walking? Spontaneous.
Bodhya.
And this is, Bodhya means what? Deep or even more simple desire. Right? So if it's so cheap as to be bought just by desiring, just imagine a shop very common, you say, yes, I want that, I want that. And it's, oh, you want it? Yes, I want it. Okay, thank you. Because our desires are not specific. Because I have so many desires. Like for example, if I want to rent a room, my desires are very specific. If I'm going to buy something, I have very specific desires. If the room is more, I don't buy. Right? Very specific. Right? It has to be this size, this color, that much. Okay? And then I'm going to buy it. And when it comes to spiritual life, all somehow, there is mercy. Automatically. It's not specific. So therefore, something is coming, but we cannot put this into a correct shape, because we are not, we do not see very clearly where do we want to go, how do we want to develop. And just as they say, if we, mercy is like rain, but if we put the cup this way, it will fill. And if you put it upside down, then even though the rain is there, the mercy is there, it will not fill. Well, so again, another time when Prabhupada was, I think they were walking somewhere in the park, and then they saw there was some duck which was walking very loudly, demanding some, asking for some drink, some food. And then he got this duck, got the most, as compared to other others. So, in other words, we have to make our endeavor, and the more clear we are about what we want, the more clear we are in our desires. It's actually about shaping desires. And this goal setting is just shaping our desires. Because our desire, because what? If material, I have very specific desires. Very specific. No, which shape, which size, color, time, price, everything. Why? Because I really want it. Therefore, my desire is specific. But if you tell me about something that I'm not so sure about, like, I don't know. I'm not going to buy a computer now. I'm not thinking about buying a mobile phone. So therefore, if somebody tells me, do you want a better mobile phone, a better computer? I don't have any ideas. No. I don't have a formal idea what I'm looking for. Whereas if I'm looking for a computer, I have a very specific idea. How many gigabytes, RAM, how many gigahertz, very clear. So therefore, to make the sign of our actually desiring something is that we become more and more specific in our desire. And we become more and more clear in what we want. This refers also to the spiritual life. The more clear we are, the more clear are the steps we get, and then Krishna naturally will be more inspired to give the mercy. Yes, please.
My personal goal would be to develop intense love and focus on the acharyas, the teachings, Radhisha, the name, intense desire to preach, along with a permanent and increased compassion, and acute perception of the truth.
So, at home, please write as if you have achieved this. So imagine, you have got all the blessings. So you're right, I am fully focused on the acharyas. And then to say what it means. It means I read every day, you know, for half an hour, I read the commentaries. Or I know the outline of the commentaries of the acharyas on the Gita, on the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, specifically. And I'm focused on the name, what it means. It means that I only hear the name without any exterior thoughts, external thoughts. Again, put it specific. And I hear, you know, I become so absorbed for half an hour or 1 hour as I'm chanting japa, I am hearing and thinking of nothing else but just the 16 names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. I am empowered. What does it mean I am empowered? It means that as I get up in the morning, I have a huge smile on my face and I jump up from my bed and I think, yes, finally I can do this now. And finally, this period of boring 7 hours in the bed are over, now I can do it. Or whatever. Okay? Make it specific and interesting for you.
Can you have the spirit before going to bed? Yes, to go out to China 16 pounds, you know. This happens to me only on Ekadashi day, the next day, the country. Yes, to go back to China to do my rounds and do China again. Mm-hmm. Cannot we have this, you know, before we achieve it, it's not.
Yes. Alright, good. So, specific, you know, like for example, again, imagine, as you're writing, can you get this 8-year-old boy and give him the marking sheet and ask him to, you know, tick whether you have, whether you're moving toward, towards your purpose, towards your objective. So if the boy, the boy can see, okay, you're in the morning, you're smiling, okay, good, you're, the alarm clock goes off and you get it out, okay, so if you can observe, if you can tick, then it's easy, it's, it will be so much easier for you to move these steps, to make these steps. And if you're just telling, you know, mark, asking me, mark if I'm empowered, mark if I'm improving, mark if I'm focused. Again, focused, okay, somebody who is focused himself, can mark it. But I'm not focused myself, so if I'm saying, you know, that I will become focused, I can know what it is. So if I see, if I do something, how does it look like, or you know, if I spend 16 hours without moving from my, from where I sit, for example, and it's filled with taste. Okay, so this is one thing you can do, and the other thing you have already have done is write down. Just imagine that if you could have asked. Just imagine that we went to Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, and then Rupa Goswami, somehow or other, in your heart, inspired you and told you that I will come to you in a dream. You can ask me any 3 questions about your devotional practice. Any 3 questions about, but only 3. Because I have no time, there are 20 people in the room, so night is short. Right, so write down 3 questions that you, if Rupa Goswami came to you in a dream, that you would ask him in your life. Alright? Everybody in this room, part of you also, we're not just listeners, we have to do this too. Okay? Everybody. So 3 questions to Rupa Goswami. And please try to work on your goals, making it personally attractive and specific. And writing it, making it a very attractive picture for yourself. Clear about this? Okay, good.
So, yes, for me, I was thinking that one of the reasons why I was doing studying Bhagavad Gita in the same way, it was because I'm not clear about what is the goal. So I expect that I wrote
So you can write that after I study, I have a very clear list of specific and understandable goals. That's what we are trying to do. Because as we see from Rupa Goswami, if we have clear specific goals, we'll be given it. Just imagine, if we just have a strong desire, we are getting it. That's the price. And desire means I know what I want. We don't get it because we don't know what we want. Yes? Whereas we know so much things about what we want materially. Yes, I want to have this like that, I want to have a room like this that doesn't leak, and I want to have this price. Very, very clear, very specific. Okay? And usually I'm getting it. Usually I'm moving towards that. So if I have the same clear goal about spiritual life, according to Rupa Goswami, that's what's required. If you just have a clear desire, we are given it. Isn't that nice?
So we are trying to hone our
desires. Okay, so we have a little more time, and let us just see what else Prabhupada writes here in the purport. So he's written about Rupa Goswami, about some of the story, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, their position, how also they, from the traditional caste system point of view, they were considered to be contaminated, because they worked as hired servants, of course government servants, very highly positioned, but hired servants of a Muslim king, Muslim ruler, Shah. So therefore they were considered to be already like outcasts. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made them acharyas. He made Haridas Thakur the Namacharya, Rupa Goswami he made the Rasacharya, and in general he made him the acharya of the whole science of bhakti for us. Because what's required is the essence. The essence of Varnashram is the guna and karma, and not the external, some external details. And he, Srila Prabhupada, again, emphasizes that Rupa Goswami has given 50% of his immense earnings. You know, after retiring, he got two full boats of gold coins. So he just gave them out to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. 25% he gave to the relatives, and 25% was kept for emergency. And so this is always the ideal that Srila Prabhupada sets for us in our practical life. Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that we are all Rupanungas. And then Srila Prabhupada speaks about bhakti. And there is something very interesting that Prabhupada says here. Prabhupada gives a very simple definition. It says, bhakti means devotional service. And then, listen to that. Every service has some attractive feature. Every service has some attractive feature which drives the servitor progressively on and on. Every one of us within this world is perpetually engaged in some sort of service. That's what Prabhupada mentions many times, that's what's the intrinsic quality of every jiva. That's why it's the highest religion, and that's why it is the best yoga, because it's based on service, and we are all service at all times, servants at all times. We always serve somebody somehow. Even if somebody tries to be the ruler, the king, still they serve. At least their mind, if not anything else. At least their body and their senses, if not anything else. Every one of us within this world is perpetually engaged in some sort of service, and the impetus for such service is the pleasure we derive from it. Driven by affection for his wife and children, a family man works day and night. A philanthropist works in the same way for love of the greater family, and a nationalist for the cause of his country and countrymen. That force which drives the philanthropist, the householder, and the nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of mellow. Mellow is Bhaktisiddhantaji's word. So usually it's adjective, yeah, mellow. Something is mellow if it is sweet and juicy and what else?
Relaxing,
yes. Now we say mellowed out. Yeah. But Bhaktisiddhantaji used it as a noun, basically like a mellow taste, some very, very satisfying taste. Relationship whose taste is very sweet. Bhakti rasa is a mellow, different from the ordinary rasa enjoyed by mundane workers. Mundane workers labor very hard, day and night, in order to relish a certain kind of rasa, the paycheck, oftentimes. It's rare even to find somebody who actually loves their work. So, to relish a certain kind of rasa, which is understood as sense gratification. The relish or taste of the mundane rasa does not long endure. And therefore, mundane workers are always apt to change their position of enjoyment. A businessman is not satisfied by working the whole week, therefore, wanting a change for the weekend, he goes to a place where he tries to forget his business activities. Then, After the weekend is spent in forgetfulness, he again changes his position and resumes his actual business activities. So this is bhoga tyaga. Yeah. We try to enjoy it, then we become fed up, then we give it up, then we become fed up with giving it up, then we go back. So chapala, this is chapala sukha, flickering happiness. It's, you know, we always need some change in the material world. Prabhupada says, a living entity cannot steadily remain either in sense enjoyment or in renunciation. Change is going on perpetually, and we cannot be happy in either state because of our eternal constitutional position. What does it mean? We cannot be happy in either state because of our eternal constitutional position. So what is the either state? So bhoga or tyaga. So we cannot be happy perpetually in bhoga, and we cannot be happy perpetually in tyaga. Why? Because... What did you say in here?
Both are not perfect.
Both, what is imperfect in bhoga? Bhoga is good. You're enjoying.
Temporary.
No, but even if you imagine, can imagine, it's not. It's long lasting. What's imperfect there? Usually, I'm.
You don't enjoy.
Why?
You don't enjoy because you're not connected to the right source.
Okay.
If you're connected to the right source, you will enjoy in the right way.
Okay.
It's not the natural status of the soul. The natural status of the soul is to serve Krishna.
To serve, okay. That's alright.
Krishna should be in the center.
Not spiritual. Okay, alright. Alright. Aditya Madhavi, you wanted to say something? Okay. And you wanted to say something?
Spiritual, that's why you would like. It keeps changing.
Okay, okay.
See, your eternal relationship is always with Krishna. Now, if you try to establish a relationship with something else and you want to enjoy something other than with Krishna, then obviously you're going to have this flickering happiness which is never permanent. You can enjoy permanently and eternally only with Krishna.
All right. Cannot
enjoy with anybody else other than Krishna.
Okay, you wanted to say something? Okay, you're happy, yes? As it is. So, it's very interesting. Bhoga and tyaga, both are not natural. Even enjoying something that seems we all want to enjoy, it's not our nature. It's not spiritual. Krishna is not in the center. It's not with whom we are related. In other words, it's like taking a fish and putting it in sugarcane juice, right? So the fish, maybe it even likes sugarcane juice if we drop it into water, but the fish wants water. All right. So it's based. It's Krishna is not in center. It means it's based on the false ego, right? In other words, it's based on some false concept of being the enjoyer. Of a false concept of being the enjoyer. Of, it's based on some acquired taste. Like last year, I remember, somebody, who was it? Yeah, Braj Bihari, I think, he said, he told Burjan Prabhu, I will give this Maha Sweet to, I forgot, Padma Madhaji, I think, yes? Yes, I will give it to Padma Madhaji. And then he said, no, she's from China, she will not like sweets. And I asked one devotee who lives in China, and he said, yes, they don't have a concept of sweets. Their sweet meat is something slightly sweeter than neutral. And if you give them like halwa or rasgulla, they will spit it out. And you think, ah, what is this? They will spit it out, right? So, in other words, very often our tastes are based on some false concepts in our mind, false ego, right? If I grow up and everybody around me never eats sweets, and if they get some sugar, they spit it out, then I will think it's not tasty. And if I live somewhere where they eat, meat, and they say, nice meat, I will think, yes, meat is nice, right? But everybody drinks beer, and they think, yeah, beer is good, and I'll try, to persuade myself beer is good, although it's bitter and so forth. So it's based on false ego. It's not what actually we enjoy. It's like some concept given to us about what is enjoyment. And same thing, renunciation. It's based on some false concept of who I am. It's not who I actually am. So therefore, it cannot actually satisfy me. It may satisfy the concept, right? And therefore, I may think, yes, I'm happy. Like if you have a car, or if you have some set of clothes. Yeah, let's say you have a set of clothes, and you like your dearmost, like your best sari and your best kurta, for example. Yes. That you like the best, and then your friend comes and with great care and love he irons it so carefully and so nicely, and he does it and you feel, ah, it's so nice. Yeah? Do you have such experience? That somebody does something to your car or to something that belongs to you in such a, he puts his heart into that, and you feel some pleasure from that, right? Because some other person is doing something to your thing, but they are not actually doing anything to you personally, right? So in the same way, all these enjoyments and all these all the renunciation is based on the false ego. So therefore, it's not satisfying. Cannot last.
Because you're thinking that ahamkar. Ahamkar means false ego. So aham means I am the car. You identifying yourself with the car. Is it
yes,
that?
Yes. Something like that, yes. So chapala sukha, it's a flickering happiness. It comes and goes. So can I ask all of you to please remember a case where you were happy about something and then some time passed and you were not happy at all about the same thing? Yes, same thing. You got something, you were very happy. Some time passed, and you became totally frustrated. Everybody, please get something like that. Please remember something.
Is it spiritual or non-spiritual?
How can it be spiritual? That's what we are talking about. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Please remember about something that you for some time you were happy about it. You got it and you became very happy. How can it be spiritual? No, let me give you an example.
It's not spiritual, we're not purified yet, so we don't realize that. Like when we take a big maha feast, we say,
yes.
Nectar, we don't realize Krishna's still yes. Next to us, and we actually should be in agony that Krishna's not with us.
Right.
We forget temporarily and we enjoy.
Yeah. So like you get a new MP3 player, for example, right? You get a new MP3 player and you're very happy for some time, and then you start using it and you become, that doesn't work. Or even worse, as they say, you get a new computer, yes? And you're so happy about it, you're happy about your computer for 3 days until you find out that your friend has bought a computer which is better, faster, having bigger hard drive, and costs 3 times, one third less. And you become, why didn't I buy that computer? So please turn to your neighbors and give them your story about something in your life that made you for some time happy, but then... Huh? You can... So everybody had a story, right? Yes. So it's universal, right? Everybody has things like that in material life. We get something and we are frustrated after something. Bhoga and Tyaga, or Chapala Sukha. We are thinking we are happy for some time, and then, we lose the thing, or the thing disappoints us, or a person get divorced, or we don't get divorced, but we are very unhappy with that person, and so it goes. So this is what Prabhupada wants us to realize about bhakti and about spiritual life. That bhakti is different. Sometimes we may have a similar experience also in bhakti, that we are for some time very happy about something or somebody, but then we are very unhappy about the same thing. So it means that our happiness at that time still was not pure, it was not completely spiritual. So that's what we are searching for here, to change our experience of happiness, to replace our selfish happiness with bhakti rasa. So bhakti rasa is the topic here. Prabhupada says, this eternal engagement in bhakti rasa can be understood by a serious student, not just by a student, but by a serious student, upon studying the nectar of devotion. So again, we have to study, seriously. So in that regard, I want to ask everybody to please read ahead. We have 21, as far as I remember, 21 lessons on Bhakti Rasamrita in the first part, but it's just over a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe a little more. So it's going to go a little fast, right? So therefore, please, everybody, go through the book before the class. Before each class, please read ahead 2 lessons, approximately, so that you are together. If you can, please also read either The Waves of Bhakti, this great book, which it's called, The Waves of Devotion, right, which a very nice companion book for the Nectar of Devotion, because it addresses some of the misprints and deciphers, brings in some Sanskrit. And if you want to be a really, really serious and deep student, then you can try Bhanu Swami's translation of the commentaries by Shijiva Goswami and Shri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, which are amazing, give amazing insights into the Bhakti Rasamrita.
It's more in depth.
It's as far in depth as we can go, basically. Very, very great gift by Bhanu Maharaj to all the students and teachers. Right. So please read ahead. Also, please, you have student handbooks, and I think there are supposed to be some questions. We have also worksheets. So if you use them, your study will be much, much more effective if you have questions, if you try to answer the questions. Yes? Before, yes. Try to do it before. I think that's the system. Somebody is checking it and marking. So yes. Yes, please do.
Some of these, because they do not, they get from the
I think, in the student's handbook, there might be a breakdown by the chapters, as far as I know. Waves of Devotion, or this? This actually covers everything, but...
It has volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, it has 2 volumes. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu commentaries. The texts themselves, translated with Sanskrit, and Sanskrit translated, and the commentaries by the Acharyas. It's wonderful. But the Waves of Devotion, they also address how things are described in Prabhupada's, because this doesn't touch Prabhupada's translation. Waves of Devotion touch also Prabhupada's translations here.
Would you recommend that?
Pardon? He translated this, yeah, Bhama Swami. If it's not there in the temple, is it there in the temple? I think
yes,
it's there. If not, do you still have these books? Yeah, Mahabharata.
Yes.
It's in the temple, yeah? Okay. If not, maybe Ras Bihari Lal's in Loy Bazar.
It's available in Rajbihari.
Yes. They are different.
For the course, I mean,
yeah, waves of devotion. But for your personal deepest study, this is the best. And yes, serious student. But it's not enough to just study. Although it's very helpful, we have to try to put it in practice. We have to try and put it in practice. I remember when I first read Bhagavad Gita, I was a Buddhist at that time. And I was searching for best practice, and when I found Bhagavad Gita, before that I had read plenty of spiritual books, Christian, Sufi, Buddhist, some Indian also, even some Vedic literatures, Mahabharata. But when I got Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada, as it is, then I saw that everything is here. Whatever I found some other places was in the Gita. But what I found in the Gita is not to be found anywhere else. And even though it wasn't easy for me to accept immediately that the Absolute is Supreme Personality, I was philosophically convinced. I was defeated. You know? I was put against the wall that it's the most logical and philosophical thing to conclude about the Absolute Truth. And then I decided I have to try and practice it, but only after I actually went to the temple and tried doing some service that some realization came. So also all these things here, they will come best to us if we put them in practice every day. So it's best if we try to convert what we learn into some practical tasks for us. So we'll talk about this as we study. For today, I'll just read a few more sentences by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada says, the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. Isn't that amazing? In other words, if you are alive, you need to love. Right? It's amazing. No one can live without loving someone else. Interesting. So, if you, as soon as you stop loving, loving someone, you die. Right? This propensity is present in every living being. Again, the same thing. In every living being, even an animal like a tiger has this loving propensity, at least in a dormant stage, and it is certainly present in the human beings. The missing point, however, is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. And then we skip to the next paragraph. Prabhupada says, in the primary stage, a child loves his parents. First he loves himself. He says, give me milk. I'm wet. He loves himself. Then he loves his parents. And because they give him food, they changed his dress and so forth. Then his brothers and sisters. And as he daily grows up, he begins to love his family and society, then community and country, nation, or even the whole human society. But the loving propensity is not satisfied even by loving all human society. That loving propensity remains imperfectly fulfilled until we know who is the Supreme Beloved. Our love can be fully satisfied only when it is reposed in Krishna. This theme is the silent substance of the nectar of devotion, which teaches us how to love Krishna in five different transcendental mellows. Our loving propensity expands just as a vibration of light or air expands, but we do not know where it ends. So sometimes we think, we get an impression that loving Krishna is not loving your neighbor, is not loving your country, is not loving your, you know, relatives. No, no, no. That's different. It's completely different. But you can see how Prabhupada describes it here. Loving, love of Krishna is the expansion of that love. It's not a smaller love. It's not like a different direction of love. It's an expansion of the intrinsic loving propensity. Sometimes we pretend by loving Krishna that we can neglect everybody else. And it may be okay for the first, you know, few months or for a year before we understand what is what. We may, you know, become very rough to our parents. You know, we may preach down to them, or we may say, "I am not your son," because, you know, as one devotee told me, and the mother was telling him, "Son, why are you doing this?" He told her, "I am not your son. You're not my mother." Just imagine for a mother to, of course, she all ended well in that case, but. But you can see that loving Krishna means having the greatest loving capacity. It's expanding our love. It's not limiting our love, it's expanding it, as Srila Prabhupada explains here. It's not making it narrow or one-sided. It's, on the contrary, expanding it to the highest limit. To the highest limit. And it has to be love. It's not just something for our sake. It means we give away. We give away. We try to make somebody else happy. Not just us. Make somebody else happy. And in that case, it's Krishna. And if we are trying to make Krishna happy, it will, if it's truly so, it will mean that we will have, automatically, we will have love and respect for every living entity. Every living entity. It's a very deep and important topic. I just wanted to draw your attention to this very interesting paragraph in Srila Prabhupada's preface. The nectar of devotion teaches us the science of loving every one of the living entities perfectly by the easy method of loving Krishna. We have failed to create peace and harmony in human society, even by such great attempts as the United Nations, because we do not know the right method. So, if we don't love others, we don't know the right method. If I don't love, you know, every living entity, I don't know the right method of loving. If I don't love even the karmis, I don't know the right method. Even a Madhyamadhikari, he has a perfect love. He is compassionate to the innocent, he doesn't bother the demoniac. What to say about loving devotees? If I don't love the fellow devotees around me, it means I don't know the right method. So we have to learn. And again, another sentence here, that's another gem from Srila Prabhupada that struck me here. The middle of the second last paragraph. The nectar of devotion will give us practical, very nice word, practical hints, not theoretical hints, practical hints, how we can live in this material world perfectly engaged in devotional service and thus fulfill all our desires in this life and the next. Now listen to this. The nectar of devotion is not presented to condemn any way of materialistic life. I mean, that's striking. Prabhupada usually is very outspoken on materialistic life. But here he says, no, that's not the purpose of nectar of devotion. It's not to condemn any way, not even about pious, but even impious materialistic life. It's not to condemn any materialistic life. But the attempt is to give information to religionists, philosophers, and people in general on how to love Krishna. One may live without material discomfiture. In other words, okay, take care of your physical side. But at the same time, he should learn the art of loving Krishna. Otherwise, everything is... At the present moment, we are inventing so many ways to utilize our propensity to love, but factually we are missing the real point, Krishna. We are watering all parts of the tree, but missing the tree's root. Hare Krishna. thank you for tolerating me for 2 hours. So please, at home, work on your personal goals for this study. Make it specific and measurable so that, let's make it a six-year-old child. A six-year-old child can mark your progress here, okay? And make it personally attractive. In other words, it has to be something that you read and you think, wow, I want to do that. And three questions to Rupa Goswami. If you could ask only three questions, main important questions to Rupa Goswami, write them down. Because we are talking to Rupa Goswami here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Okay, read ahead. See you tomorrow at 2:30. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So the class is over. If anybody has any other questions or discussion, we can still.